Welcome to this episode of Innovating Employment, a podcast by and for workforce development professionals, brought to you by the Ontario Centre for Workforce Innovation. This podcast series asks leaders from across the workforce development sector to share their ideas and solutions for meeting Ontario's workforce needs. I'm your host and producer, Noah Snyderman. On today's episode, we're joined by Helen Hirsch-Spence, CEO and founder of Top 60 Over 60, to discuss empowering older workers to adopt an entrepreneurial mindset. Here's our conversation with Helen Hirsch-Spence. Hi, Helen. It's great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to be interested in the topic.
Absolutely. So, Helen, to start, can you tell our listeners about how you founded Top 60 Over 60 and your vision for the organization?
Sure. Actually, the genesis was a high school reunion several years back when I was contemplating the richness of the experience of all these people that were surrounding me, many of whom were about to retire. And I realized how wasteful that would be. All the experience and expertise that they brought to the table would be lost. So that was one of the reasons why I considered it. But more specifically, I myself, after retiring, found that I was being treated very differently when I applied for scholarships or fellowships. And shortly, didn't take long for me to realize that actually it was ageism that I was confronting. So, you know, I started doing a bit of research on it and realized that, in fact, ageism was one of the major stereotypes and prejudices, discriminations that really has not been dealt with the way in which other isms have, whether it's feminism, sexism, racism, and so on. And I began to look at my surroundings and look at the people who I was friendly with, and the conversation often gravitated towards how invisible they had become once they retired. They had often been executives or, had fairly powerful positions, and yet as a result of not having a title, they realized, and I realized too, that people sort of are dismissive. In North American culture, after introducing yourself at any kind of social gathering, the next question is, and what do you do? So if you happen to have been retired, or if you're doing something in a voluntary capacity, it seems like it's not as well respected. Anyway, so those are some of the considerations. And, I was curious and always spoke with people who I encountered who are in my age bracket. And I'd hear over and over again, is it just me? I feel lost. I don't know how to react. This is a period in my life that I hadn't thought that much about. I always wanted to retire. I wanted to be in a place where I had the freedom to do what I wanted. And after a year or two, many people realized, I can't play golf and tennis and go to lunch or travel, take care of the grandchildren for the next 30 years. I'd like to figure out what next. So it's sort of like entering adolescence all over again, but at a different age, post-adolescence probably, and thinking, okay, I've got opportunity. What am I going to do with it? That's what inspired me, because in fact, I wanted to continue learning and finding new ways to use my experience. And there were no real courses. There was nothing out there that other than things such as learning in retirement, which is great, but I didn't want to necessarily learn about philosophy or opera singers. I still wanted to grow professionally and personally. So that was the real genesis, I'd say, of the Top 60.
And Helen, can I ask about older workers who are still in the workforce, about some of the challenges that they may be facing in Canada?
Sure. So by older worker, I would say I'm referring to people who are probably 55 plus, because well, that Freedom 55 ad by that insurance company was probably an incentive for many people to consider retirement before they actually were ready to. And for a while in the earlier 2000s, people thought, yeah, let's get rid of some of these older people and make room for younger generations. And in fact, that is a very false reasoning. It's called the lump of labor fallacy, which refers to the concept that there are a fixed number of jobs in the economy. So many people believed that if you got out of the way, the younger people would take over. But what they didn't consider was the generative power of older adults living in and working in their later stages of life, because if they have money, they spend money, which creates jobs. They also create new enterprises, new jobs, which engages younger people too. So that myth has been totally debunked. And because of the longevity dividend today, we have such an opportunity to take advantage of those extra 20, 30 years that we have, because we are in a time frame when the average age has been expanded considerably from the 70s into the 80s now, and it's just going to continue in the next decade. So people have to rethink, how are they going to finance their future endeavors as they live longer? Many people are not fortunate enough to have a retirement savings or pension fund that is adequate. And so the older worker today is very often the person who needs to continue to work, as well as somebody who wants to work. The challenges that they face are that many of their managers believe that they can not contribute as meaningfully as they did when they were younger. They often think that they're more expensive, so they want to get rid of them, depending on what the business is or business model is. So those are the kind of messages that people get. And what it does is it instills in them a sense of, maybe they're right. Maybe I shouldn't be here any longer. And it diminishes their sense of self-worth and self-confidence. So that's one of the challenges. Another challenge is that professional development is often not given to older workers in certain areas of employment. Again, because people assume that when you hit a certain age, you're going to retire. So people don't have the opportunity to expand their expertise in new and different ways. And this has all been debunked with evidence-based research to prove that, in fact, older adults have experience, which actually trumps knowledge and skills very often. You can teach people a bunch of new things and skills, but experience is something that you cannot teach them. They have to have lived it. And as a result of that experience, older people tend to be able to make decisions more quickly based on their past experience. Older adults can get to conclusions and make decisions much more quickly and more impactfully than younger people. That's not to say that the younger ones don't get to the same place. It just sometimes takes longer. So the belief that you can recruit younger people and get the same skill, knowledge, and experience level is probably quite faulty. And it's perhaps more economically advantageous for companies to retain their older workers for the sake of corporate memory, corporate knowledge, but also to, you know, embark upon mentoring and encouraging and working with younger people so that they do attain a certain other levels of experience. Now, I'm not saying for a moment that young people cannot do exactly the same things and sometimes much, much better than older workers. There's a different type of knowledge and a different type of skill set. But I think what's surfacing more and more is that's precisely what's happening. It is a different skill set. They have millennials and Gen Xs all have learned differently than boomers have. So when you combine all of that together, you have a richness and a much more productive work environment. So it's probably advantageous to leave people in the workforce longer and not encourage them to leave. So that's one of the major challenges. The other thing is that as you get older, sometimes you don't want to use your time in the same way. So if employers could come up with a bit more flexibility in their offerings, it may be a way in which they could retain people. And then there's also the whole factor around wanting a bit more free time and not necessarily wanting all of the responsibility that you had. So very often you'll find that the people who are in managerial or supervisory or executive roles may be perfectly content to do something other than what they've been doing, not necessarily as responsible, perhaps, as it was, because they just want to enjoy the work environment more. So there are a number of challenges that they face, but I would say that the chief challenge is ageism and continues to be ageism, because most people aren't aware of their ageist bias. Mm-hmm. And that was proven time and time again in the research that we did.
So Helen, from what you're saying, ageism is something we need to better acknowledge or recognize in the workforce. How do you see that happening?
Well, I think first and foremost, there has to be a clear understanding of what ageism is and how it impacts all of us differently and how pervasive it is. I think that through the research that we did with the RESET program with the top 60 over 60, we were able to ascertain pretty conclusively that most people don't really see the depth and the broad scope of ageism and how it's been present throughout their lives. You know, if you look at any magazine, you will see young is better, youthful treatments to look younger, dye your hair, every possible birthday card that you seek out for somebody who you know who's a bit older is really very funny, but the implication is that they're losing their memory, or they don't look as good as they used to, or they are over the hill. There are numerous expressions that we use that diminish the truth about older people, such as, you know, I'm having a senior's moment. Well, what does that mean? It's implying that you're demented or losing the ability to use your brain in the same way as you could when you were younger. And all of these things have been part of our social upbringing for so long that we don't even recognize it when we're confronted with it. And I say that because we just take it for granted that it's true. It really affects your own self-efficacy and self-confidence if you expect not to be as wonderful, beautiful, productive as you were when you were younger. It just becomes the expectation, the personal expectation. So it's sort of like internalizing a belief, a social value that undermines your own ability to move on. So it's really critical that we examine how ageism affects everybody. I've seen studies in which they say that children as young as 3 are already thinking in terms of not wanting to get older. Aging is a process. I mean, if we're lucky enough to get older, it means that we haven't died. It's really a prejudice against our future selves when you think about it. Because if we're all aging as we should, it's natural. And some things change. And it's the acceptance of that. And it's the awareness. But I think the other thing that is important about ageism or recognizing ageism is that people, they don't talk about it very much. And primarily, they don't talk about it because they don't recognize it. So in the study that we just completed with the Ontario Centre of Workforce Innovation, we had 48 participants, 55 and older. I would say the majority of them didn't think of themselves as old. So if you don't think the majority, there was only one person who recognized their age and considered it to be older. Almost everybody thinks of old as being 20 years beyond what they are, and they feel 20 years younger than they are. And that's a really interesting finding, I think, because then you don't think about ageism affecting you unless, in fact, you're in the workplace and you lose your job. And many people do because of that. That's the only kind of ageism most people recognize, is if it affects them professionally. But the way in which it affects them personally and the way in which it affects, you know, society is really not even understood or recognized. So I think a broad campaign is necessary, not at all for just the workforce, but everywhere.
So, Helen, how does Top 60 Over 60 work to help older adults with feelings of internalized ageism?
What we do is run programs and courses for anyone who's interested in really embracing and looking at ways in which they might want to reinvent themselves or maybe stay in their workforce where they are, but they want to sort of become more entrepreneurial in their outlook. So we take a look at specifically an entrepreneurial mindset. The signature program that we have, which is called RESET, is really about resetting your mindset at this point in your life. Because if you take into account all the experiences and the knowledge and the skills, the expertise that you bring forward, how do you reinvest all of that in a way that is aligned with your personal values and what you think you want to do moving forward? And as I say, some people need to work and other people may have the luxury of not having to work. So it could be something such as a not-for-profit. It could be voluntary activity, but it also could be starting a business. Because more than young people, older adults between the age of 54 and 65 have the highest success rate of starting new businesses for a variety of reasons. But I think that it probably would extend beyond 64 if statistics were taken beyond 64. But if you think about it, everything is measured up to 65 and beyond 65. The age 65 seems to be like a magic number, and that has to do with pension. I understand that. But that pension age was established in the 1930s when the average lifespan was 62. Well, needless to say, today the average lifespan is 85. Well, back then, you know, you received a pension as a reward for living long enough to receive it. But that's no longer the case. And so many people just put everybody in the 65 plus age bracket and think of them as one homogenous group. And that's so unfair, and it's also so untrue. If you think of children or babies, I mean, think of all the words and designations there are for children between the age of 0 to 20. You know, you have infants, you have toddlers, you have babies, you have preschoolers, you have youth, you have teens, you have tweens, you have adolescents. I mean, I could go on. You have a number of designations. Well, from 65 on, we have nothing, just seniors, which in my opinion has a very negative pejorative connotation, because the whole conversation around aging has always been about fragile, vulnerable, incapacitated individuals. That's what you hear. You hear about a gray tsunami instead of a silver economy. We have a window of time where we can start taking advantage of the richness of these people who are 65 and older, who are healthier, more tech savvy, more diverse than any other generation before them. And that's just going to continue. Because as I said, the longevity dividend is just extending. Children who are born today are expected to have an average lifespan of 104. So it's time that we rethink where middle age is or older age and stop with these ageist beliefs that, you know, 65 is magical. So what we do is we help people understand that they have probably internalized numerous myths about aging and how they can overcome it. And what we do very often is go through a process of self-awareness, do exercises. All our courses and all our programs are highly interactive. So we usually introduce some research, such as on optimism and positivity, give some information about how it's been proven that social isolation, loneliness, is as bad for you when you're older as smoking 15 cigarettes a day or alcoholism. And that the way in which you combat that is to get involved, engage with other people, find activities where you can get involved, find programs that are interesting to you where you don't isolate yourself. And what we're trying to build at the Top 60 Over 60 is a community of learners. So that is probably one of the more significant things I think that we accomplished through some of our programs, is that people from very diverse backgrounds, because for this research study in particular, people came from all walks of life. They just self-selected. We had nothing to do with the selection. It was arbitrary. And what they appreciated more than anything else was getting to know one another, you know, crossing sectors, crossing ages, different experiences, and the richness that that collective brought to the fore. So you may have a question that when you give people permission to be creative and imaginative, they come up with solutions that you may never have thought of. So those are the kinds of exercises that we do often throughout our couple of days when we do these courses, whether they're hour-long or day-long. And it seems to be very fruitful. And people have gained confidence, I think, in that way. And I do think that confidence is one of the key factors that you need to consider as you age. I know that you lose confidence when you lose your title, or your, when you have don't have the answer at that cocktail party about what you do. As I say, you can see people's eyes glaze over. And, you know, if you come up with some answers, I think it's great. And it could be anything. But I think that's one of the ways in which we empower people who are older. And then we provide on our website, we have lots of resources. We have a membership organization now, and we encourage people to get involved and participate.
So, Helen, I want to loop back to something you said a little bit earlier about adopting an entrepreneurial mindset. So, why do you believe it's valuable for older adults to adopt an entrepreneurial mindset?
So many people probably think that an entrepreneurial mindset means or refers to only starting a business, but that really isn't the case. An entrepreneurial mindset includes, you know, looking at opportunities, you know, finding resources in your own life and creating something new. There are all sorts of competencies that are involved in an entrepreneurial mindset, and it's something that's been recognized, especially in Europe, not so much here, as being important to anybody. However, I think that for older people, because we missed that window of opportunity in schools where it wasn't the discovery method of learning, you know, it was more traditional with the sage on the stage instead of the guide on the side, we didn't have as much opportunity to process information in different ways. So this is all about continuing to learn. The entrepreneurial mindset is about that whole growth mindset, about learning new ways of thinking through things, being a bit more imaginative and creative and out-of-the-box kind of thinking. Those are things that tend to be perhaps a little bit new age, I think, to, you know, those of us who are in our 60s and 70s. But an entrepreneurial mindset is the same as an entrepreneurial mindset. And that's one of the things that we're trying to encourage employers to take a look at, too. When you encourage people to go inside and look at their own personal creativity and think outside the box, you come up with some really wonderful solutions to problems. And there's a real emphasis now on problem solving and design thinking. And all of that is something that you can learn and that we are focusing on when we talk about and sort of teach an entrepreneurial mindset.
Helen, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Before we let you go, can you provide our listeners with your top three takeaways for employers and service providers to empower older workers to adopt an entrepreneurial mindset?
I think employers have to embrace the notion that just because people may be getting older, that they are just as capable as they were in the past, or that they can be even more productive or entrepreneurial. So I think that they have to change their mindset and they have to give people opportunities to grow. And by that, I mean they have to perhaps find a professional development or personal development that will enable their older individuals to look at things that they are interested in. So in other words, engage them more directly in what would they like to learn at this point in their lives, or how do they think they could enhance their skills, expertise, experience, and ask them where their thinking is. And the other thing is maybe providing more flexibility for them and allowing them to be a bit more creative, not only allowing them, encouraging them to be more creative and thinking outside the box. That's easy to say if you're somebody who yourself believes that, but many employers don't understand and don't give permission to their employees to take the time off or to do things. But I think we have examples with Google and Facebook and a lot of work environments that do provide incentives for people to, you know, speak to other people in other areas so that they're not as siloed. So if they are more creative also, perhaps in their staff meetings and in their time for individuals to try something new, you know, build that into their time so that they can do something perhaps different. I mean, it really depends, right, on what they're doing. If they're working in a factory or if they're working with intellectual property or an academic institution, everything is different. But there's always opportunity for developing new and different ways of doing things. And, you know, if you give people permission to do it, very often they will come up with something new. But encourage diversity of ages and stages and cognitive diversity. And I think you'll find that employers can enhance the entrepreneurial mindset of their workers very easily. But they have to embrace it themselves first.
Helen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Noah.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Innovating Employment. If you like the show, let us know on Twitter and Facebook. Links are in the description below. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Stay tuned for our next episode on February 19th. We'll be joined by Lise Belland, VP Central Southwestern Ontario, and Isabelle Ayot, Director of Employment Services at Collège Boréal, to discuss employment service delivery through community colleges. Thanks for listening.